Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to RNIB Tech Talk, our chance as blind or partially sighted people to get together each week and explore the world of technology. We're always keen to hear from you. What's working? What's not working? What needs switching off and switching back on? Just let us know via email, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about accessible products from the RNIB Products for Life store that could help you with your health. Sightless Combat is back with another console video game. And is Ring the only thing, or should we be considering other accessible doorbells? That's all to come this time on Tech Talk. Joining us, as ever, are our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovic. Welcome into you both. Be good to know what's on your tech radars this time. Hubert, let's come to you first.
So we have a new Apple event coming up. It is on the 7th of May, and it is all about new iPads, as far as I can tell. So some of the rumours we have is a new lineup of iPad Pro models, which includes an 11.1-inch size and a bigger 13-inch size, with an OLED display, which will provide enhanced contrast, greater power efficiency, faster refresh rate, so that'd be quite interesting, and it'll be using Apple's M3 chip. Together with that, alongside, you're looking at two new iPad Air models, one at its standard 10.9-inch sizes, and a iPad Pro size, which is the 12.9-inch. They will not have OLED displays, but they will have Apple's M2 chip, if the rumours are to be true. And with the iPad Pro additionally, you're also looking at a new Magic Keyboard, apparently, with an aluminium shell and a larger trackpad and possibly a new Apple Pencil.
Are you an iPad lad, Hubert?
I do love an iPad, but I guess because I'm not a magnification user, the screen size for me isn't really relevant unless we go back 13 years. So I tend to prefer the smaller form factor. So for me, I love the iPad mini, which I'm not sure how popular it is, but it's always been my preferred one, personally.
I mean, we had a family iPad, you know, that we used to take on holiday so that, you know, you had a little kind of TV essentially with you, or, you know, we'd load it up with movies and things like that to try and keep our son amused if we were on a long journey or something like that. But we never got round to replacing it. And I always find that, you know, I get a bit lost in the middle of those larger screens. Callum, what about you? Do you use the iPad much as a blind person?
Every now and then. So my wife's got an iPad, and she loves it. She uses it for, well, she's got the iPad and the Apple Pencil, and she used to use it for doing drawings and doing designs when she had a bit of a craft kind of business going, and she loved doing that. Now she really loves being able to handwrite out notes using the iPad and the pencil. But yeah, I use it every now and then, but I think a bit like you, I just, as a voiceover user, I find the screen a little bit, it's a bit too big, you know, sometimes there's a bit too much going on, especially on those kind of complex websites and apps where they've got like a split view going on as well. I think the iPad lineup needs a bit of tidying up, to be honest. You've got like the standard iPad, and then the iPad Air and the iPad Pro, and then you get to the point where you're getting an iPad with a keyboard, and then are you moving closer to a Mac at that point? I don't really know what the difference is between them all, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, your wife's sighted, and I know from speaking with people who are partially sighted or low vision that they really do appreciate the iPad. They love being able to bring that screen, you know, closer to their face, being able to look at photos or videos, and also for a little bit of productivity as well. So it is more accepted, I think, in the classroom as well, you know, compared with a smartphone.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they're very, very popular in education.
Absolutely. You know, and you know, there are lots of folks who absolutely swear by it. You know, particularly now you've got this, like you say, the split screen kind of feature, and you can do more multitasking on there. Maybe pair it with a keyboard. I guess for me, I'm at my most productive when it comes to really, you know, creating content or editing audio. I probably still would reach for a laptop for those kinds of tasks. But it'd be interesting to hear from you, actually, if you use an iPad. What do you use it for? Where do you think its real strengths are for you? Well, Hubert will be following that event with much interest, and we look forward to hearing listener reaction to that. Callum, what's on your mind this week?
Well, no real breaking news from me this week, to be honest, but I have been having a lot of fun playing with some smart home stuff, because I've upgraded, as you kind of teased there, I've upgraded from a Ring doorbell to a Google Nest doorbell, because I was having quite a few issues with Ring, and it just the app seems to have gone downhill a little bit. Like, yeah, it's still accessible, but, you know, quite clunky to use, very awkward to answer the door, which is kind of the point of these video doorbells. We were having problems with the connection and just wasn't giving us what we need. So I've switched to the Google doorbell, which is going really well. But then I'm kind of thinking, well, hang on a minute, because I've always had the Amazon ecosystem. I've always had Alexa all around the house. But now I'm kind of thinking, this Google app is actually really nice, the Google Home app. I actually prefer this. And I've got the Google doorbell, which is obviously more compatible with the Google Assistant. So I've then ended up... I'm in quite a fortunate position where I've got these Sonos speakers, and you can switch between Lady A or the Google Assistant. So I've switched over to that as well. And I mean, nothing's fallen apart yet. Everything's still working. But it's interesting. You kind of forget what else is out there sometimes when you get locked into these ecosystems.
I'm not sure I really get the whole smart doorbell thing, if I'm completely honest with you. I mean, what happened to good old-fashioned knocking? Anybody in? It just seems like a bit of an over-engineered... bit of fun. Hubert, what about you? Have you got a smart doorbell? Do you get it?
So I currently have the Ring doorbell, and I will agree actually with what Callum said. The app is okay. I'd like it to certainly be a bit better, a bit more accessible, but I can use it. I mean, I quite like it, especially when you get a knock on the door and I can just answer the doorbell upstairs in my office and go, look, and you leave the delivery in such a safe place. And, you know, I quite like that, which is quite handy, especially when you can't open the door right there, right now. I quite like it. Do I think it's necessary? Divided on that, I think, you know, it has its uses, but it's not necessarily a requirement, you know, as much as a security camera would be, let's say.
Yeah, I just open the upstairs window and just shout to the messer, I'll be with you in a minute, pal. So there we are.
That is an option, I suppose. Yeah.
It is. Well, I look forward to hearing that, Callum, as I'm sure we all do. So there we are, smart doorbells. Well, let us know what you're playing with, what's on your mind in the world of technology. Hubert, Callum, thanks a lot. Stick around. It's another episode of Tech Talk. It's massively important, of course, that we all take good care of our health. And for those of us who are blind or partially sighted, sometimes that can present some unique challenges. How do you take your own temperature, find out how much you weigh, or administer medication? Well, somebody who's got some of the answers is Louise Kenny from RNIB's Products for Life team. Welcome back into RNIB Connect Radio, Louise. You're going to share some news about products that you have in store that could help with taking better care of our health.
Yes, thank you, Dave. So the first product that I would like to talk about is the Talkin Ear and Forehead Thermometer. So as a parent with sight loss, I have two young children, and I actually find this product very, very useful. I'd be lost without it. I'm sure, Dave, you'd be the same in your household as well. So the Talkin Ear and Forehead Thermometer, it has its own little cradle that it can sit in, so it's, you can store it away nicely in the bathroom, and it does the Celsius and the Fahrenheit. So if you have babies, you can just put it to the forehead, press the button, and it will speak the temperature back to you. For the older children and adults, you can pop it into the ear and just repeat that process.
Okay, and does it give you that temperature? Is it in degrees C, degrees F?
Yes, Celsius and Fahrenheit, you can choose which you prefer.
All right, and presumably this is a battery-operated device, right?
It is. So it has two AAA batteries, and they are included when you purchase the thermometer.
Excellent. So you can change those yourself. I suppose, Louise, it's important to emphasize this is not like a medical grade instrument. This is just for
No,
domestic
no.
use. Just give you.
This for domestic use at
Yeah.
home. As a parent, like with young children, I would heavily rely on it. If I feel that they're feeling warm, I would quickly grab it just to make sure. But you do get to know, as well when to use it. Yeah.
It's a tool in the toolbox, and then of course if you have concerns then you would contact your
Yes,
doctor or your
contact your
medical.
101 or GP. Yeah.
Yeah, good. And the batteries seem to last for ages, I found.
They do last for ages. We're the same in our household. I would change them just to be keeping them fresh, but they do last quite a long time.
Yeah, and as you say, you've got that little dock there that it sits. That doesn't charge it or anything, does it? It just sort of holds it.
No, it doesn't charge it. It just keeps it. I suppose it keeps the top clean. You know, the part that you put into the ear. So it's the base of it sits under the cradle, so it keeps the top end clean.
Okay, all right. So that's the just remind us of the name of the thermometer there. That's the talking thermometer, is it?
It's the talking ear and forehead thermometer.
Excellent. Right.
Would you like the price for that one?
Yeah, at time of recording, yeah.
£27.
27 quid, there you go. Obviously, we'll give details at the end about how you can get the latest pricing information, because I know sometimes you do deals and people catch these things on podcasts later on. Let's move on then, Louise. Maybe some of us have kind of fallen off the New Year's resolutions quite some time ago. Easter wasn't
Yes.
that long ago.
No.
So maybe one or two of us had a little bit more chocolate. Speaking for myself, tell us about bathroom scales.
Yes, so we do have the Breuer glass talking bathroom scales. I'm just going to use your word. They're stylish. They're very modern. They have four memories on them, so you can record your previous week's weigh-in, so you can go back and check your weekly loss. They have a British female voice, but there's also five languages with the scales.
Okay, so these are the from Bura, I think, is the manufacturer.
Yes.
Yeah, and as I understand it, there's sort of a black tempered glass top.
Black tempered safety glass, that's correct, and it's a large base that you can stand on. So if you have to hold on to a grab rail or anything, you've got plenty of space then on the scales to get yourself steady.
And it's going to contrast quite nicely if you've got a pale lino or tiles in your bathroom. Obviously, it's going to contrast quite well. And one of the things about these scales, because I have these, we use them at home and we keep them stowed away just sort of down the side of a cupboard, is that you just kind of pull them out and put them on the floor.
To set them on, and there's little grips on each end corner as
yeah.
well, to hold them into place.
Yeah, little feet, and then once you set them down, you hear a beep, and then it tells you the voice announces
It
this
does. Scale is ready.
ready to use. Yeah, and then you.
It'll prompt you the scale is ready, and then you can stand on to weigh yourself.
Yes, yeah, and hopefully, like in my case, I always worry it's going to say one at a time, please, or something like that.
I was joking, our house would be please step off.
And then, of course, you get the announcement, and you can have that again in metric or imperial.
Yeah, you can have kilograms, pounds, or stones would be the measurements available there.
Do you know, it was one of the things that started me off about 6 years ago, wanting to do something about my own weight, because those numbers kept getting closer and closer to 100 kilograms. And I thought, oof, if I get to 100 kilograms, it's a one-way street, right? I've got to do something about that. So, yeah, just useful to keep an eye on. And again, you know, the weight isn't the only measure of your health, right? Important to take advice from a medical professional. You know, some people naturally are just heavier. So, you know, don't obsess about this. And these are quite sort of basic scales as well. You don't have to link them to the Wi-Fi or the Bluetooth or anything like that.
No, they're not. You don't need Wi-Fi or any smart gadgets. These are just bathroom scales you can store. People tend to store them in their bathroom. And just personal use.
Okay, so we've talked about measuring your temperature and your weight. What about administering medication? Some of us use eye drops. You've got something that can help with that?
Yes, so we do actually have the Easy Drops, which recently featured on Dragon's Den. So the full name is the Easy Drops Eye Drop Applicator. And what's different about this Easy Drop applicator is that it's designed to cover the full of the eye, and the drop is to hit the centre of the eye, so you're not going to have the little spills that will come down the sides. And also it helps with some people, whenever they're getting eye drops in, they flinch or they have like a quick movement, and that's what causes the drops to spill down. So this is designed to literally tilt your head back, put the applicator over the eye and release the eye drops in, and it'll go straight into the centre of the eye.
Blimey. Yeah, I mean, I'm luckily, I've never had to use eye drops myself. I remember, you know, when you go to the ophthalmologist, sometimes they'll put eye drops in to dilate your pupil to have a better look. I've had those kind of drops where somebody else is doing it. But obviously, for somebody who maybe you've been prescribed drops that you need to take several times a day, you need to find ways of applying those yourself with confidence.
And these are designed so that if the eye drop bottle has a nozzle, that's the type of bottle that will be compatible with the Easy Drop applicator.
All right. What about sort of tablets and pills?
Yes, so R&IB have two jumbo pill organisers. So the first one would be the 7-day-a-week organiser. So that's for someone who only takes medication once a day, and you have different types of tablets you have to take once a day, and that's that. You can have your pharmacist pop those tablets in for you, and that's you good for the week. Or if you're someone who has multiple medication and you have to take it morning, noon, evening and bedtime, again the pharmacist will set that up for you. Now they're designed so that they are abbreviated for the days of the week, so MON for Monday, and that's done in print and also on Braille.
Right, and who's that for, Louise? Is it somebody who maybe gets in a bit of a muddle with their meds?
Someone who gets in a little bit of a muddle with taking medication, but also, yes, we have devices that can help us read the medication, and sometimes it's just easier just to have it there in front of you, so the box could be sat beside the kettle, so as a reminder, and you go in, it's just there for you just to grab and take the medication when needed.
And we didn't talk about this, but I know R&IB in the past have sold the Bura blood pressure monitor. Is that still available?
That's still available, yes. And again, it's not to replace any medical appointments, but if you're someone who is conscientious about your blood pressure, the Bura blood pressure monitor will speak out the reading, and you have to stay very still. You have your arm band rest that you put around your arm, and then press the button to switch it on, and it will expand, so it'll tighten up on the top part of your arm if you're familiar with having the blood pressure check, and once it stops it will speak out the reading.
Okay, so talking thermometers, talking bathrooms, scales, easy drop applicators and pill box organizers, all ways in which R&IB's Products for Life team are supporting your health. Louise, if anybody wants to browse the full range and get the latest pricing information, what's the best way to do that?
For more information, you can visit our R&IB shop website, which is shop.rnib.org.uk. Or if you're not online, you can phone the helpline on 0303 123 9999.
Louise Kenny from R&IB's Products for Life team, thank you so much for joining us here on Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Louise Kenny there from R&IB's Products for Life store with some options for supporting our health. And listening to that is father-to-be and co-host Callum Stoneman. Callum, do you think any of these products are going to support you on your parenting journey?
I think so, yeah. Slightly embarrassed to admit that I'd not really thought about the talking thermometer much that she mentioned there. And that was a nice, quite low-tech, quite easy-to-use product. I mean, as we know, babies and young kids tend to pick up all kinds of bugs and colds and whatever's going around and bring them home. I'm not much better for that, to be honest, as you can kind of hear this week, even. But that could be useful, you know, just have that there. Just if we need to do a quick, literally just do a temperature check, you know, and see how he is, see what's going on. The scales is an interesting one, because obviously Louise was talking about bathroom scales there, but I think you said something to me just before we started recording about using the talking scales, kitchen scales, I'm guessing, to weigh out the bottles, didn't you?
Yeah, so usually with formula, you've got a ratio between the formula powder and the water. So, you know, it might be like a level scoop of powder to, say, 30 millilitres of water. And so I've used the kitchen scales for making up that bottle. So you can weigh that, you know, reasonably accurately, put the bottle on the scale, make sure obviously you've got your powder in there, and then you hit, you know, zero it. And then, you know, you can add your water, you know, maybe with the funnel or something like that. So that's one option. Hubert, how about you? Do you use any tech to support your health?
To be fair, it's actually a tech area that I haven't explored enough of. I've always wondered what is available out there. I mean, only up until recently, I wasn't able to find a talking body temperature thermometer. So it's one of these things where it's an area I've not explored enough of. I recently got a set of bathroom scales and I found that amazing. And obviously, the kitchen scales help me weigh out my, you know, food for my guide dog in my particular sense at the moment. But it's certainly good to hear of some of the solutions, you know, high or low tech. I think it's an area that I didn't know enough about. I mean, I do use my fitness tech, like my Apple Watch, but general health, I think I'm still lacking a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I always notice on the Apple Watch, you know, if you've ever had, like, alcohol, imagine that, it does, you know, bump up your heart rate. It's amazing by how much.
And it's interesting when you get certain notifications about your heart rate when it's too high or too low, and it's like, it makes you pay attention to it a bit more. And sometimes if you get worried about your health quite quickly, that can be quite the opposite effect. It might not actually benefit you. It might make you more anxious for some people. That's what I heard some people say. For me, I'm not always a massive person that worries about my health, but I do keep a close eye on it either. I like to balance it out, so I keep an eye on it, but I try not to make these sorts of like, oh, your heart rate's a bit high or your heart rate's a bit low. I try to not worry about it too much unless it starts becoming more frequent, unless these notifications pop up quite a lot. The fall detection is quite interesting on the watch. Whenever I played with my guide dog in the garden at some point and it kind of popped up with an notification saying, you've taken a fall. If you don't press this button, we'll call the emergency services. It's like, no need.
I've never had mine gone off yet, actually. But no, that is mine. My Apple Watch doesn't seem to like it. When I go to the... This is really random. When I go to the toilets at work, when I dry my hands under the hand dryer, it always gives me a notification from that noise app saying you're in a loud environment and 10 minutes at this level could cause temporary hearing loss. You might want to move away from it. It's only on for a few seconds.
They are loud, hand dryers, right? And I used to hate them as a kid. I was absolutely petrified. Just something about the noise, the high frequency noise. But back on your parenting journey, Callum, some of these, you know, doorbells and stuff like that you're playing with. I mean, do you see any use for any of those kinds of things in terms of a baby monitor or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting one because there's no end of smart baby monitors out there. But then I don't really want him to be surrounded by technology as far as I don't want to be relying on technology for everything, which is a weird thing to say on a technology show, I know, but it's the reality, right? You know, babies haven't changed much over the years, I don't think. And, you know, you would think the ways you look after them haven't really changed either, you know, the fundamentals of parenting. But, I mean, there's all sorts of these smart baby monitors, and I'm kind of wondering, how smart do you go? You know, there's some things that could be useful, like I found a few that have got a temperature sensor in there, so it can tell you what temperature the room is, And I'm thinking, well, that could be good. If his room gets too hot, I could even set that up so that, because he's going to be born in summer. He's due at the start of July. So I'm kind of looking at those thinking, well, if that ties into other things, then I could maybe, if his room gets too hot overnight, then I could, have a fan switch on or something. There's all sorts of ways you could do that. But then there's others which feel like real marketing hype. We scrolled past one the other day that said it had cry recognition. It could send you a notification and tell you what type of cry your baby was doing, whether it was a tired cry or a hungry cry or a cry because they need to change it. And I was looking at the date on that webpage. I thought, hang on, is this an April Fool's thing? Was really?
Yeah, sometimes you just got to use your own judgment, and even with things like temperature, just put your hand, inside the baby grow and just feel their chest, right? Do they actually feel hot to the touch? Yeah. Well, good luck with all of that, and we'd love to know how you are using technology to support your health, or maybe on a parenting journey like Callum. Do let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Callum Hubert, thanks a lot.
You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's time to talk gaming. I have invited one of RNIB's gaming gurus, RNIB's accessible gaming officer, Sightless Combat, joins me.
Hello, I am very pleased to be back here.
Looking forward to talking gaming as always. Let's talk about Spider-Man 2. Before we dive into one of the more recent accessibility-based updates, can you tell us briefly what the game is?
So Marvel Spider-Man 2 is, of course, the sequel to Marvel Spider-Man, the 2018 smash hit, and also the sequel to Miles Morales, which was like a smaller spin-off game, arguably comparable to a DLC, but which also kind of continues the narrative as well. But the key thing is it's a very much a sort of combination adventure. It's not just Peter on his own. It's not just Peter Parker as Spider-Man on his own doing, saving the city, etc. It's very much a story of friendship, of, bonds being tested, and of course of Spider-Man's rogues gallery deciding to make life very inconvenient, I think is one way of putting it.
Let's talk about the accessibility of the game. What would you say is kind of the overall accessibility level of Spider-Man 2, maybe compared to Spider-Man, the original game in 2018 as well?
So that's a great question. Spider-Man 2 actually is, it's the most accessible Spider-Man game to date. 2018 and Miles Morales were games that I played with sighted assistance. But the fact of the matter is that Spider-Man 2 has added so many things now that make it possible to play large chunks of the game without needing any assistance at all, even if it is a little finicky at times, but we'll likely come onto that as we go. But it's definitely, whilst it's not perfect in certain aspects, it's definitely the most accessible Spider-Man and arguably the most accessible superhero game to date as well.
There have been accessibility improvements to this game. What are they? What has been added and improved?
So bear in mind, just for a little context, the game launched in October of 2023. The patch was said to be coming out in December that would add screen reader and audio description, which we'll come onto in a second as to how far those actually extend into the game itself. But then the patch was delayed to March of 2024, which whilst it was frustrating, I was just hoping, how far is this going to go? I really hope this works as well as I'm thinking it's going to work. And thankfully, for the most part, it does. So the main three things that were added, yes, three, not two, were audio description, which we knew was coming. So that's a secondary track that describes the visual elements that you otherwise wouldn't get, in terms of if you can't see, you wouldn't understand that, characters are looking at each other or that characters look different or, what moves they're doing, etc., or the events that are unfolding. And that's been used in, films, TV, theatre, but is now coming into video games, and Spider-Man 2 is the latest addition to that. The screen reader actually extends beyond just the boot menu settings and tutorial screens because it impacts, the skill trees, the maps, the move lists as well. So you then understand, you get a feel for how the game is meant to work. It also does, of course, the quick time events, so the QTEs that are present, which means you can, save civilians, you can pull objects, you can, know when you have finishes and things available. So those are the two things that we knew were coming, but we didn't know the extent of. The one thing that wasn't anticipated necessarily, but hoped for, was improvements to navigational assistance. So whilst there was a way to have it automatically look at waypoint in terms of it being the camera, there is now a way that you can tell how far away you are from an objective, the rough height of an objective as well away from you. So whether it's above or below you, using the 3D audio available on PS5. Of course, it's the distance and the height, but also as well just the fact that you are getting closer to it as well, which is a huge thing. And when your objective changes too. But it's via this little feature called the audio point of interest, or POI indicator, which you have to turn on even if you turn on the vision preset. And that's a clicking indicator-like sound that you'll hear. Even if you have it set to automatically look at waypoint, you'll hear that clicking noise as you move, indicating that you do have a waypoint. Some missions don't have waypoints, which is unfortunate. And other missions, even if they do, they can be sporadic or very, very small and hard to work with. But that's not necessarily the fault of the feature itself. But all in all, I only had to have assistance with, I think, two, maybe three missions in the entire game. And other than that, I completed the main story without needing assistance, which was fantastic. So being able to say that it's this close to full playability, relatively speaking, is not something I expected to be able to say when the game launched last year.
When we're talking that it has almost reached full playability, what else do you think needs to be improved in terms of accessibility to make the game, fully accessible?
Yeah, I think the main thing is that there needs to be improvements to waypoint navigation. So specifically making waypoints that currently don't function correctly or are hard to find, work like easier to work with. So that includes stuff like when waypoints are inside of buildings, or if you're on top of a building, and the waypoint is below you, it should sort of factor that in and let you go, down from where you are and round to where the waypoint is, rather than just saying the waypoint's below you, you should be able to get there, even though it is vertically below you and you can do nothing to, get through the roof of wherever it is you are. I think that's one of the big things. The other big thing, of course, is the fact that you can't track certain activities on the map. There are markers for specific mission types that don't, or specific activity types that don't appear. So things like crimes, you can't track those via the what they call the FNSM app, the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man app, which is an in-game feature that lets you have a list of things that you can then click one of the items on and it will track that. So crimes, for instance, don't appear on that. Certain other mission activities that I won't spoil because they are part of the main story technically. There are later ones where even if you do find all of the initial ones, you have to physically, visually look around for the next ones to appear, which is such a shame. And there are side missions where waypoints physically just don't exist. So you will go into a side mission and it will be, you'll be thinking, oh, this is fine, but you won't have that indicator of where the waypoint is because there aren't actually any waypoints to use. And I think the final thing as well is being able to have skip puzzle, or better yet, a way to get through missions where you're required to aim at certain things, and the they are very specific small points. So there's a mission where you have to link power nodes to then get through to the next part of the main story because it is a main story mission. Unfortunately, there's been a guide that's had to be written for that specifically because it doesn't have the support that it's needed to give you enough waypoints and other information. And I think a small quality of life thing for me would be to be able to turn off the constant prompts of when you have finishers available and things like that. So if you're in the middle of combat and you're skilled at it, oh, I've probably got finishers, or you're listening to the audio cues, I have finishers available, etc. So there's a fair few things. It's mostly to do with the navigational assistance and making things like the triangle prompts or the activation prompts easier to hit. And not have them be tiny little boxes, essentially. But, if those things were implemented and you could track every single mission type, I think that would send things a long way forwards. But the good thing is you can complete the majority of missions without needing any assistance. And the ones that you do need assistance for have had community written guides as well. So they're not, it's not ideal and it doesn't always work, but it's a solution of sorts. You know, in lieu of Insomniac putting the feedback that's been sent in by people to good use and implementing it.
And when it comes to these improvements, have Insomniac given an indicator that they are aware of these accessibility issues, and have they indicated that work is being done on them?
They have, in fact, given indicators of that. I actually dropped into one of their live streams and essentially, you know, asked a few questions. And the implication was that feedback is being observed and looked at. As to what happens from there, I'm not entirely sure from their point of view. But the good thing is we know they're listening. So, you know, that's half the battle. Knowing a company is listening is half of it. The other half is hoping that they're going to, you know, be able to put the time, the budget, the resources in to make this game as fully playable as it can be. So, you know, here's hoping, I guess, is the best way to summarize that.
If people would like to give Spider-Man 2 a go, where can they get it?
At present, Spider-Man 2 is only available on PlayStation 5. So if you have a PlayStation 5 console, then you can play it. Then again, you know, there is a possibility that down the line, at some point in the distant future, Spider-Man 2 could get a PC port as well. But yeah, PlayStation 5 is the place to play for Spider-Man 2.
Now, if people wanted to see more of your content or find out more about accessible gaming, where can they go?
So you can either find me on my socials, that's Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, etc., as Sightless Combat, SightlessKombat, where, shameless plug, you can also find footage of me playing through Spider-Man 2, should you wish to see how it's done firsthand without going through the game. Say, for instance, you don't have a PlayStation 5 or you don't mind spoilers. And also, of course, you can email the RNIB gaming address, gaming@rnib.org.uk, if you want to find out what's going on. Or, of course, you can go to the rnib.in/designforeverygamer page to keep track of the DFEG initiative as well.
Excellent. Sightless Combat, RNIB's accessible gaming officer. Thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you for having me.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Would you believe that it's fast approaching 2 years since we started doing this show, since we started doing Tech Talk? And if you've been with us for that long, then first off, thank you. We really appreciate it. Secondly, well done. I don't know how you've managed to put up with us for that long. But if you have managed, then you might remember back in the day, I did a bit of a review and demo of the Ring video doorbell that I had up, well, near my front door, funnily enough. And I've got other Ring equipment as well that we haven't demoed, but I've got other stuff like the Ring burglar alarm, and we've got an indoor camera as well that came with the alarm that we is known in the app as Spy Cam because we use it to spy on the pets while we're out and make sure that they're behaving and make sure they're okay. But over the last few months or so, I've become less and less impressed with the doorbell. You know, a lot has changed, especially since I did that demo. For example, I showed you the Rapid Ring app that made it really easy to answer your front door. That's now gone. So everything's done in the main Ring app, which is okay, but answering the door, as I said at the start, is becoming a bit tricky now. You know, the focus is a bit inconsistent with VoiceOver. It just seems to jump around all over the place. Sometimes speech can just disappear for some reason until you close out of the app. I've not really figured out what causes that or how to resolve it. And you've got to remember that answering the door is something that you usually do in a bit of a rush. You know, if you've got a delivery coming, those delivery drivers don't tend to hang around. So, you know, you want to get on that quickly if you need to say to them, you know, can you just leave it somewhere or can you come back, you know, tomorrow or something. So, we were struggling with that. And I'm not going to dwell too much on the accessibility because that can change, obviously, as we all know. But there were other reasons as well. So I was having real problems getting it to connects to the network and stay on the network. And we've gone through all the troubleshooting steps. You know, I've got a really good mesh network that provides really, really good coverage all throughout the house. Everything else has been fine. all the other devices, even Ring tech support couldn't figure out what was going on. You know, the speed was fine, the connection itself was stable and all that. They, you know, they sent us new devices and that didn't fix it. So it meant that we either weren't getting footage or we were getting very, very unclear footage. And it meant that if we did manage to answer the door, then the other person couldn't hear a word we were saying and we couldn't hear them. So it was, you know, we weren't impressed. We were looking for something new. And as usual nowadays with smart home, there's all sorts out there. There's loads of different brands. And then obviously they've all got their own apps and their own ecosystem. And are they going to be accessible? And you've got the added complexity there, of course, of the accessibility. Well, okay, this device looks great. It's got really good reviews. It's a really good price. But am I actually going to be able to use it? And with a lot of these, you can't tell until you actually buy the devices and start playing with them. So I've been looking into, as I said, new doorbells, new security cameras for outside in particular. And one of the ones that kept coming up over and over again in the mainstream reviews was the Google Nest range. And eventually I've gone with this because I thought, well, okay, we all know Google. We know they've at least got an accessibility team. So hopefully that's going to be a good experience. And for me so far, I've only had this Google doorbell for about a week. And we've got another Google camera as well that protects the driveway, that looks over the drive. And we've been really, really happy with them over the last... we had the camera for a couple of months now, and we've been really impressed with that. So that obviously gave us the bigger push to go with the doorbell. So I just thought I'd give a few comparisons. This isn't a particularly... I'm not going to say one is good and one is bad, or I'm not going to say go out and buy this one, but just thought I'd go through some of the differences and similarities between the two and, you know, some of the reasons that I, at the moment at least, prefer this one, the Google one. So this is all my opinion. I will let you hear some stuff in action as well. This won't just be me talking to you for 10 minutes about doorbells. So if we start with the similarities, so the Google Nest range of doorbells comes in a few different options, similar to Ring. They've got a battery powered one, which is what I've got, or they've got a wired one where you have to wire it into your like existing hardwired doorbell. The battery one that we've got, you can do both, so you can have it wired in if you want to, or you can just run it on the battery, which is what we've done because we don't have a hardwired wiring for a doorbell. So we've got that, but then there is the option of wired only as well if the battery element doesn't bother you. And also similar to the Ring service, the Google one does require a subscription to store your videos. But there is a little bit of a difference here. So where with Ring, you can, if you don't have the Ring Protect subscription, you can only view the live footage from the doorbell. You can't view any past events. Google's a little bit less strict. So if you don't have Nest Aware, which is their subscription service, then you can view events up to 3 hours in the past. So if someone came to your house a couple of hours ago, say 2 hours ago or 3 hours ago, and your doorbell recorded that, then you would be able to view it. But if it was any older than 3 hours, then you wouldn't be able to see that unless you've got a... so that's without the subscription. But if you've got the Nest Aware subscription, which I can't remember the exact price. I think it was about £50 for the year, something like that. Obviously, double check on the Google Nest website for pricing at the current time and obviously in your country as well if you're not in the UK. But it was similar to the Ring price, and that will give you 30 days of event history. So it's well worth getting that. You also get a few other features in the subscription as well, which I'll come to in a minute. In terms of differences and how they compare, so the Google one is, I would say that the doorbell itself is a little bit sleeker than the Ring one. It's longer. It kind of feels like a remote control without all the buttons, obviously. But it feels quite nice. It feels quite slick, and it kind of blends in with the wall quite nicely outside. The way that you charge the Google one is you take the doorbell off the mounting bracket, and then it's got a little USB-C port in the back of it. So you just bring the doorbell inside, charge it up, and you're good to go. You'll get an alert from the Google Home app as well once the doorbell's fully charged. So that's nice, because with Ring you kind of had to guess a little bit, especially if you had one of the ones with the removable batteries, because the batteries had lights on them. So obviously if you've got no vision or if you can't see light, then that wasn't really much good to you. But with the Google one, you do get an alert when it's full, which is good. The main feature, though, that made me really go with this was facial recognition. So if you've got the Nest Aware subscription, and this is what I meant by other features, you can program in people's faces. So as the doorbell records, or any other Google Nest camera, I think most of them have this. Certainly our driveway one does as well. So as it's recording footage, it will pick up on people's faces and add them to your library as an unfamiliar face. And then you can go into the app and assign a name to that face. So then when someone comes to the door, if it's in your library, rather than just saying someone's at the door, it will say Callum's at the door. Or in my wife's case, when she comes in and out, it will say Jess is at the door. So you really get an idea of who's there and who you're about to open the door to or speak to. And if it's an unfamiliar face as well, it will tell you, you know, unfamiliar face seen. So you get that. There's also things like vehicle detection and package detection, which works really, really well. You know, for example, someone came to the door the other day with a parcel. They rang the doorbell and it said, over my speakers, it actually said someone's at the door with a package. So I just thought that was really good. You know, it gives you that extra description of who's there and what you're going to get. So let's have a look at the app. So this all runs in the Google Home app. So I'm going to go into that now. I've got my iPhone and I'm just going to go into Google Home.
Google Home, devices, heading.
So I'm on the devices heading. And I am going to talk you through the app in a minute as well, because I find the app in general really nice. But let's just focus on the doorbell for a second and some of the options that we've got. So if someone actually presses the doorbell, then obviously you get a notification to say that someone's at your door. And you can tap on that notification and you will get the same screen that I'm about to show you. But I'll just go to it manually. So I'm in my list of devices. I'll just look for front door.
Driveway camera, one of two in front door, two of two in list button.
There's the front door. So I'll double tap on that.
Close.
So at this point, what it's done is actually started a... you might be able to hear some of what's going on outside my house. They can't hear us, at least I don't think they can. But it's straight away started a live view of what's going on at the front door. And we've got a bunch of options here. So straight away we're into live view and we can watch, if you can see it. You can watch or we can listen to what's going on. So I don't know if you can hear the birds outside. But we've got a few different options. So I'm going to just go from the top of the screen.
Close front door button. More options button.
That just takes you into the settings.
99% battery power, not charging button.
There's the battery level. It then shows you, gives you a bit of a preview of your event history, but there is a more accessible way to get to that, which I'll show you in a minute. So I'll now just go down to, they're the main things you've got at the top, and then you've got obviously the live view and a bit of a calendar view for your events. If I go down to the bottom of the screen,
more actions button.
We've got another more options button. That just allows you to switch off the camera if you wanted to for any reason.
Start two-way talk button.
There's the two-way talk button, so that will turn on our, the phone's microphone and allow us to talk to the person at the front door.
Choose quick response button.
Quick responses. Now, these are really nice. So sometimes the doorbell will ring and I'm at work, for example, and you know, I might be in the office or I might be in a meeting and I want to let somebody know, say if it's someone with a delivery, I want to let them know where they can leave it, but I might not actually be able to speak. So what you can do, if you double tap on this,
you can just leave it.
You've got three options here. So you've got, you can just leave it.
We'll be right with you.
We'll be right with you.
We can't answer the door.
And we can't answer the door. So I would love it if you could create your own of these, but you can't. So at least for now, you've just got these three, as far as I can tell. But you can tap on one of these and it will just play a pre-recorded message on the doorbell. So as an example, the one that says you can just leave it sounds like this.
Hello, you can just leave it. Thanks.
So you can play that. The other two are around a similar kind of length as well. So they'll just say, you know, just hold on a moment, we'll be right with you. Or I think the last one says something like, sorry, we can't answer the door right now. So you've got those little, obviously they're pretty generic. They won't work for everyone. But you've got those responses there as well. So if you do need to just tell somebody, you know, if I'm upstairs, for example, in a meeting or even doing a recording and someone comes to the door with a delivery, I can just quickly go on and tap that, you know, you can just leave it button and hopefully they'll leave it on the doorstep or in the porch or something. So that's pretty nice. Obviously, as you saw there, nice and easy to check your battery level. So that's a little bit on the doorbell itself. I'm going to come out of this. So I mentioned the Google Home app as well. And I did want to talk you through this because, obviously, because this is Google, it does work with Lady Air. So if you've got an Amazon Echo, you can enable the Google Nest skill and you can set the echoes to announce when someone's at your door. I don't think that that includes the facial recognition. So if someone's in your face library and they come to the door, you'll get a notification on your phone, but I don't think it works with Amazon. It will just say someone's at the door. I don't think it gives you the exact name, whereas the Google speakers do. But what I've got a few Sonos One speakers around the house, and they give you the option to switch between either Amazon or Google for your assistant. And I thought, right, well, hang on a minute. I'm on the ecosystem, so I may as well switch over to the Google assistant and see how I find it. And so far, seems to be working very, very nice. But also the Google Home app as well, on your smartphone. I'm finding really nice. So I've tied this into a few other things as well. I've tied it into Philips Hue, which has got all my lights. And I've also tied it into Sonos for my speakers. Don't really know why you'd want to control your speakers in the app, to be honest, but you can do if you wanted to. And I've also tied it in for my smart plugs. So everything goes into this Google Home app, and it's really nice to navigate. So what you've got the devices heading at the top. This is in the devices tab at the bottom left, and all your rooms are grouped by headings. So if I go to the devices heading at the very top,
devices, heading, words, headings,
and turn my rotor to headings, and then I can just flick down and I've got all my rooms.
Bedroom, heading, dining room, heading, front garden, heading, James room, heading, kitchen, heading.
James room, in case you're wondering, by the way, is the baby's room. So if, for example, I want to turn on our bedroom light, all I have to do is go into the Google Home app, go to Devices.
Devices, heading.
Flick down to get to Bedroom.
Bedroom, heading.
And then flick to the right.
Bedroom light, one of two in list, off, adjustable.
And it says it's off, so I'm just going to double tap that.
Bedroom light, one of two in list, on, 100%, adjustable.
That's turned it on to 100%, but it also said adjustable, so I could keep doing a one finger flick down here because it's automatically put me on the adjust option in the rotor. So I can do a flick down.
On 95%, on 90%, on 85%, on 80%.
So that's just what that's doing is adjusting the brightness of that light. And if I wanted to turn the light off, I don't necessarily have to go all the way down to zero. I can just do a one finger double tap again on that light.
Bedroom light. One of two in list, off, adjustable.
And that's turned it off. Now, obviously, you can do this by voice as well. But if there's a time where I need to control the lights and I can't do it by voice for whatever reason, maybe once we've had the baby, the baby's asleep, for example, I find this a really nice little interface to navigate. Because you can do this with the Amazon Alexa app as well. But I just found it really clunky. I find the app really difficult to navigate for controlling devices. And, of course, you can do it in the native apps as well. But then, you know, you've got one app for the doorbell, another app for the lights, another app for the plugs, and then another app for this, and another app for the heating, and it gets a bit messy. So being able to tie these into one app is just really nice. So I can just quickly jump through these. So if I, for whatever reason, want to turn on my office light, for example, I can go from the top again.
Devices, heading.
Flick down to jump through the rooms.
Bedroom, dining, front garden, James room, kitchen, head, living room, office, heading.
There's the office, so flick to the right.
Office light. One of three in list, off. Office light, one of three in list, on, 100%, adjustable.
And there you go, that's turned it on. So that's how you control your devices. I mentioned there was a nice easy way to view your doorbell events, and that is done in the same app, Google Home, and that's in the activity tab, which is at the bottom of the screen, bottom middle.
Activity tab, 4 of 5. Activity heading.
And in here, all you've really got, now obviously this will vary, if you've got some, say, Google cameras or other devices that tie into the Google Home app, then you might have more things here. But all you've got really in here is just a list of events. And I mentioned that facial recognition. So you'll see that in action here as well with these events. So I'm just going to go from the top of the screen.
Today, heading.
And all the days are grouped by headings as well, so you can navigate by headings through this.
Yesterday, heading. Wednesday, the 24th of April, heading. Tuesday the 23rd of April, heading.
So if you wanted to jump to activities on a specific date, then you can easily jump through headings rather than scrolling through each individual activity. you can just jump to the day that you're interested in. So I'm going to go back up to today and we'll just go from there. I'll just show you a couple.
When yesterday, activity, today, heading, person, 6:50, front garden, button.
So that's person. So that means it knows it was a person, but it didn't get the face. It didn't really recognise the facial features, you know, to tell you if it was a familiar face or an unfamiliar face. It was just a person. So that's what that means.
Yesterday, heading.
That's all it's recorded today so far. And that was actually my wife going out to work. So let's look at yesterday.
Doorbell, unfamiliar face, 15, 58, front garden, button.
So somebody that it doesn't recognise actually pressed the bell. That's what it means by doorbell.
Jess, 15, 45, front garden, button. Cal, 12, 18, front garden, button. Person, 12, 14, front doorbell, 12, 14, front garden, person, 8, 20, front garden, button.
So it's got a bunch of person entries there, but it's also got, so for example, it picks up me leaving. It picks up someone coming to the door just before that. And it actually, for the one that was me, and it actually recognised it as me. And similar with Jess, it recognised it as Jess as well. And all you would do is double tap on those, any of those events, and you'll be able to see what was recorded and hear the audio as well. So that's just a quick look at, obviously, the Google Doorbell and a little bit of the Google ecosystem as well. Obviously, the Google Home app does so much more than what I've just shown here. But so far, I found this to be the nicest way of, first off, getting an idea of who's at my door and what's going on outside the house and what's going on at the front door. And I feel a bit more, I wouldn't say reassured, but a bit more certain about who I'm about to open the door to. And when a delivery has come, for example, I've got a bit more certainty there. And this has been the nicest way so far of tying all these different services. As I mentioned, you know, you've got an app for the lights, an app for the speakers, an app for the heating. This just ties them all really nicely, or at least 99% of things, into one nice, very easy to use app. So that's a little bit of my kind of smart home update, I guess. Are you using any of this smart home technology? Are you in any particular ecosystem? Has this given you the kind of push that you've been looking for to get started with all this smart home tech? Or are you not really bothered? Is it all a bit of a gimmick? Let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Alrighty, that's it. Thank you so much for your company this week. We really appreciate that. Do share and tell a friend if you like what you hear. And get in touch. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Callum Stoneman, until next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.